Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 51, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. Why is it important for teachers to understand the teenage brain? Melissa explains. Should schools encourage a gap year before college? And a Texas superintendent is out after he was publicly confronted about bullying he did back when he was in middle school. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week, we chat with a foundation that's teaching students and schools how to use meditation in place of detention. Hello, everybody. Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined by teacher extraordinaire Lisa Pruitt and education data expert Russ Davis of School Status. Russ, how you doing?
Fantastic, man. How are you?
Lisa, how are you?
I'm great.
I'm great, Russ, by the way. I didn't even tell you. Hey, Memorial Day, it's coming up like a day or two. And you guys, anyone that got big plans? Are we going out of town or what?
I'm painting a fountain at the local university.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal.
And it's already like in the 90s down here.
I know.
Here,
so.
What about you, Russ?
I think I'm going to lay low, actually. I've done a lot of traveling for work lately, and No huge plans. Gonna try to avoid other humans for a while.
I hear you. Well, everyone, hopefully they'll enjoy their Memorial Day. And I think it's usually like the sign that school's coming to an end or ending.
Has ended, yeah, usually.
It kind of depends. If you're where I grew up in Virginia, we didn't get out till like mid-June. I want to say like June 15th or June 20th. It was usually around there. So you still got a little ways to go.
Nick, you didn't tell us what you're doing for...
I'm not doing anything for Memorial Day, but at the end of the week... we're going to a place I've always wanted to go, and that's Cedar Point, which is up like practically to Canada. It's Ohio, technically, and it's a big roller coaster park. It's supposed to have like the best roller coasters in the country. So,
was that a water park where the guys just kind of
they have a water park across
it?
From it?
Yeah, they have one nearby.
Well, there was a water park. I think I was reading about online that it was like apparently just two guys from college that formed this water park, and they wanted to make the scariest water. Slide ever. And they test, instead of like having like a physicist do the work, they just kind of like made it in AutoCAD and somebody built it. And then they tested it with like potatoes and things like that. And apparently somebody got really hurt on it, which is, it's just like, that's a skill. It's like being a surgeon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like maybe you should have somebody that's really good at physics, understanding. Or somebody that designs this stuff all the time. Anyway, neither here nor there, but I hope it's not that place.
No, I don't think it is. I hadn't heard that story, but I'll have to do a little Googling and make sure that my kids are safe.
Yeah.
It'll be very apparent. If they're running sacks of potatoes down at first to check it out, that's probably not a good
We're just doing the roller coasters anyhow, but I'm sure it also requires physics. So Let's get into the teacher's lounge. Lisa, what do you know?
Well, this is a story out of NPR about the teen mind. You know, I think for a long time, we've all kind of thought that your mind, your brain is finished developing when you're younger, and that by the time you're a teenager, your brain is not developing anymore. And I'm sure, as being a mother of a teenager, that I would like to say, he did something really foolish because his brain is just, So there's research that's out now that says, nope, that's wrong, that there's actually lots of changes to the brain happening in adolescence, and that there's research to prove it, that there's still a lot going on, and that the importance of children knowing that, and teachers knowing that, and parents knowing that, so that you can treat it appropriately based on the changes.
I agree with you, I'll just say, because I felt like I wasn't fully mature as a male until late 20s. And then I read somewhere, seriously, like I still made dumb decisions, and I still thought I was invincible.
Yes,
you know, like,
you did.
And it wasn't until like they say your frontal lobe closes, and that's supposed to take place in the late 20s.
Yeah. So. Well, and you know, honestly, as a math
Lisa
teacher,
agreed with me way too much during that entire thing to the point where it was uncomfortable.
Yes, Nick, you were quite dumb. Whenever you were really
I have to say, as a middle school math teacher, that I have seen where maturity levels will affect a child's ability to be able to handle some of the tougher math subjects like algebra. Like if you have a child that does algebra early because they're an accelerated child academically, I have seen where their maturity has kept them from being a high performer in algebra, even though mentally they were truly book smart enough to do it, but maturely it affected them. So I can say that I have seen a little bit of, you know, is it really just closed off by the time they're in middle school? But no, they're not. Russ, did you have something you want to say?
I didn't. I was just going to say that I agree with Nick that I wasn't. I know that in high school, I made lots of terrible decisions. But like you said, you think like once you get out of high school, like you're technically, quote, an adult. But like even in college, and I mean, I was just a dummy. Like now I look back on like you can really see in retrospect, right? And so, yeah. And I don't think it's a – I think I mentioned before on the podcast that like sleep is very important for teenagers. And we talked about how they should start school later. And I think that's part of this as well, that like there's physics and biologics involved on that.
Yes, sleep. And everybody knows that their middle schoolers and high schoolers are sluggish and they have a harder time waking up in the morning, but then they also have a harder time falling asleep earlier in the evening. And there's actually research to prove now that, yep, there's a shift in the brain that actually makes them a little more awake and wired in the evening. And then, of course, so that means when you start school at 8:30 in the morning, they're actually, that's part of their nighttime. And so there is a shift.
So why is it important for teachers to understand this?
It's important for teachers to understand and parents and students because this is a real thing that you can make real modifications, but you also can be aware. Everybody needs to know what's keeping them from greatness. Nobody needs to have, you know, restraints or things put on them that are unrealistic for the time they're in. So it's important for teachers to realize that maybe some of the things that they're requiring is unrealistic. Instead of a teacher internalizing it and thinking, this student is disrespectful because he's so drowsy in my class, so disrespectful, you know, no, actually, he's not disrespectful. Actually, he's not. And, you know, I feel bad. I remember I had a student that constantly would fall asleep in my class. Well, you know, I didn't have that student later in the day. I had him early in the morning, and I feel bad now because I actually thought, gosh, you know, he didn't even care.
I think everything you're saying actually leads pretty well into what Russ was going to talk about. And so I kind of want to bring this in because we're talking about these brains and developing and are you mature enough to do certain things? And Russ, you're going to be talking about gap years, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about gap year for just a second along those same lines. I want to come back to a point in just a second about kind of talking about explaining how brains work in high school anyway, and how people, like, we get mad at folks, you know, because of their behaviors, but sometimes their brains work differently than ours, they're wired differently. But let's talk about gap year for just a second. So there was an article, it was an op-ed piece, and it was in the Federalist, and it was talking about, you know, people, you know, advocating for folks taking a gap year. What a gap year is, just a gap of a year between high school and college. So before they go right back into college, they take a year off and they, you know, do some work. They try to save some money. You know, they do some other stuff that, you
know. Go see the world or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Go right through.
Liz is rolling her eyes. And so I'm really, it's going to be interesting.
So Lissa, do you think that we should advocate for that or no, or why? Like since Alyssa has rolled her eyes.
Is when I said go see the world, but go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. I mean, this has very many fronts to it. Okay. So I'm going to speak about several different things. Do I think everyone is a candidate for college? No, I don't. I actually feel that I wish that there were more things available for children outside of high school, especially in the trade routes that would, you know, prepare them for a successful, you know, adult life to where they can have a skill that they can earn income with that skill and be adequately taught that skill. And I don't know that college does that. That's one thing, you know. So I do think that some children, if they take a gap year and they're going to work in an industry that they feel strongly that they want to be involved in, they want to learn as much as they can, great. I feel like here's why I rolled my eyes. I know a handful of people personally that have taken gap years, and not one of those gap years that either that any of these children that I love that went and took the gap years, it was an unrealistic gap year. So I roll my eyes because here's what the gap year looked like. I know one child that decided that she was going to blog about her trip overseas, and she was going to blog that entire year. Mm-hmm. She went to the most fascinating places overseas and stayed in the greatest of places, and she blogged about it every day. Mm-hmm. And she didn't put one dime towards that. Her parents did. Yeah. And that was a wonderful year. But I don't know that that's what people consider a gap year. And so she didn't contribute to that financially.
Yeah.
And although she saw a lot of what she was doing, I'm not sure really summed up to her, this is what I want to do with my life now.
I mean,
unless she wanted to be a travel agent. Otherwise, I'm not sure.
Did she probably learn web design if she was blogging, if she put some time and effort into it?
I don't know. There weren't a ton of blog entries. I checked in. So,
okay. Well, that's different.
That's one. Another child that I know is taking a gap year because she wanted to visit other sororities at other universities, and she wanted to help with recruitment for her sorority at her university. So she was going to take a gap year and travel around and get to know what other sororities were doing to help make an impact on her sorority. To me, that's not a great gap year. And again, her parents were 100% funding that. Now, I do know of a student that backpacked through Europe, stayed in hostels. And
I got to give kudos to that.
Yes. And that, to me, I was like, wow.
I'm not staying in a hostel.
And this student wanted to go into education. Knew they wanted to go into education, but they wanted to take a year, go overseas, backpack, and they wanted to get to know all different types of people and walk among all different types of people. To me, that's the best gap year I've ever heard of. They did it low budget. They paid for it themselves. They got odd jobs here and there, and they stayed in hostels, and they backpacked.
So you learn work ethic.
Absolutely.
What the real world's like,
absolutely,
how to survive.
And what that student learned, he's a male, is that he actually wanted to teach overseas.
Yeah.
So that is what, and he's working towards that.
So the author, I just want to call her out by name, is Chandler Lash, or Lash, L-A-S-C-H. But she worked at Chick-fil-A, and it taught her how to deal with customers. It enabled her to save some money so that she didn't carry so much debt. She went to a private college. So chances are she probably did leave with some debt. But she just felt like she was more mature. So by the time she was a freshman, she was mature than the other freshmen, in her collegiate class. Volunteering, joining the Peace Corps, these are the kind of things that she's advocating for. I don't think, mom and dad paying for a trip to, Bangladesh or to, Bora Bora or whatever the case is, I don't necessarily think that's a gap year. I think that's pretty privileged, but anyway, I thought it was a great article because, and frankly, if I look at it as a parent now, as whenever you become a parent, obviously you guys know you look through everything with a parent's lens. And I think that if my daughter Sloan came to me and wanted to take a gap year, she'd have to be doing something, right? And I'm talking full time, not like, hey, I want to do this 2 or 3 days a week. You need to be about the business of doing something. Either you're going to be in school, you're going to be working, or you're going to be volunteering full time. Right, you're going to be doing something and contributing to society, not laying on a couch trying to figure out, what it is you want to do with your life. We should really encourage them to do things that are going to contribute openly to society. Anyway, that's just me. Nick, what are your thoughts?
Well, I would just say this, and if you reflect, we're all in our 30s, and you mm-hmm. reflect on the times that you can backpack Europe in your life, and there's really three. It's when you get out of high school, maybe when you get out of college, but really you need to get a job is what your parents are probably telling you, especially if they helped you pay. And if they didn't, you need money. So really just high school right then, or when you retire. And that's
which
it.
I think you're too old.
Right.
Too old. And you don't want to backpack for sure. Then.
Yeah. You can't hit the Appalachian Trail for sure when you're after retirement. I mean, you can, I'm sure some people have done it, but it's just a lot harder. So really this is it. That's your one time. And otherwise, you have family and kids and it's beautiful and it's fun and you take them places, but to really find yourself. And I know that's such a cliche saying, but to get out and find yourself and see these things and learn what it's like to have to live off the economy when you're young. I think there's a lesson to be had there. And that's one of the few times to do it.
I do think it's great to have your children travel. And you're right. The best time is to do it then. To even just learn how to have real interactions with other people outside of your sandbox. But I don't know that it needs, if like for my child personally, I would love for him to go and have some experiences. But I also don't know that he would be able to fulfill it for a year. But I do want him to have that maybe for a summer.
Yeah.
I know in college some students that took a semester off and decided to go overseas or to go work. You know, I had friends that went and worked at in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And they did some not fun jobs, but it also helped them focus more on, I definitely want a college degree because I don't want to be a, you know, a maintenance man,
To help them mature.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. But it also gave them a little space and just gave them a break, a much needed break.
Yeah.
I do, the only thing about as a teacher, let's say I was a high school teacher and saying to children, hey, yeah, y'all should take a gap year. The only reason I wouldn't maybe promote it as much as a teacher is because there are lots of scholarships that are available for incoming freshmen. And you forfeit those scholarships when you don't go right into a university. And there's so many, I mean, the universities are so expensive that those things help. And so that is the one reason I would say be careful, because if you can't really afford a university yourself, and you have a lot of scholarship offers, whether it's through academics or athletics or leadership, then you hate to pass that up, a four-year full scholarship with room and board, because you wanted to go see the world. Maybe you need to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and go to college, and as soon as I'm done, I'm going to promise myself that I'll take that time before going right into the workforce.
Well, I've got a story for you guys, and I'm all over the place with how I feel about it. And have you heard this story? It's with a superintendent. I'm trying to figure out exactly where it happened, because the article's a little confusing in this regard. He used to be with Allen Schools, and then he took a job back at Katy, Texas, as a superintendent, where he grew up. And he was in a school board meeting a little while ago, and their school board meeting was being recorded, and a guy comes up in front of the school board meeting for, you know, free talk time to confront the board, and he starts talking about a time that he was bullied, and he goes in and introduces himself, and he says his last name used to be Gay. His name was Greg Barrett, and he says, my last name used to be Gay.
My legal name is Greg Gay. I was bullied, unbelievably bullied. I had kids that bullied me, even the coaches. I had nobody to turn to. One day at lunch, I had my head shoved in the urinal where it busted my lip.
Sent home, you know, with pee all over his clothes.
Well, I went home, and I got the 45 out of my father's drawer and put it in my mouth, because at this point, I had nobody in the school system to help me.
And then he says, you, sir, to the superintendent, were the one who stuck me in the urinal.
Lance, you were the one that shoved my head in the urinal.
You have the superintendent who, in middle school, bullied this person and now is running the school and just got called out about it. So first, I'm all over the place with how I feel about that. Mm. You know, should the superintendent be responsible for what he did as a child? Or should he really be leading kids?
No.
Like, I think, yeah, and we'll talk about that. But then it gets more interesting. You know, right after it happened, he's like, bring up the next speaker, you know, and so forth. But the video goes viral. It's been viewed over a million times. And the school district, they decided to go separate ways. Well, he's now walking away with 2 years' pay.
The school district fired him?
Sort of agreement for announcing
but
his retirement.
He's exiting his job involuntarily, essentially.
It says the former superintendent of Allen Schools will walk away with nearly $774,000 after announcing his retirement from the Houston area Katy School District in the wake of accusations that he bullied others in his youth. So he was actually at the Katy one. But he's now going to be paid $774,000. So my emotions are all over the place. Like, first off, like you said, Russ, like, no, maybe he shouldn't be responsible for what he did as a middle schooler. But then it's like, should he really walk away with a golden parachute too? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Okay, well, I will be the first to say that kids do the stupidest things, and then you guys were just saying, you know, gosh, I think of things that I did, and, you know,
I was an idiot,
and, you know, so obviously there's no bones about it. That guy was an idiot, clearly, just like all kids are. You know, I do think that sometimes when people do things that are, you know, terrible things in their adolescent years, that's not their heart. That's what they did. And as they grow older and have more experiences, they feel super remorseful for some of the things that they did. I would have rather seen him stay as superintendent and do everything he can to make sure that that kind of stuff isn't happening.
To speak publicly about it, right
the wrong. Absolutely. Yeah. And to say he feels horrible, I would have felt better. I don't think he should lose his job. I don't. I don't think he should be pushed out. I don't. And I don't think he should be, like you said, given a golden parachute.
I'm a little torn about it. So I think that there's a reason in this country that we don't generally hold children liable for their actions. We just got finished talking about brain research and how children's brains work differently, or, you know, they don't work, you know, I think arguably properly, or as an adult's does at that point. And so, you know, I don't think that this gentleman, I think that gentleman is owed an apology. I think that's what he's owed. And I don't think he's owed pretty much any more than that. He's not owed the guy's job. He's not owed a pound of flesh. You know, I just think very strongly about that like, because I think about whenever I was in high school, I think about whenever I was in middle school, I said some unkind things. I did some unkind things that, you know, I've gone back to people and said I was sorry for them. You know, I wasn't a bully or anything like that, but I certainly hurt some folks' feelings over time. And most folks are like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. But I think it's unreasonable to hold somebody accountable. If you are going to hold them accountable for it, I sure as hell don't think you should give them a walking away present of $750,000
right.
of taxpayer funds.
Right.
I think that, you know, if they decided to part ways, they decided to part ways, right? It sounds mm-hmm. like, and again, I am not involved with this. I don't know what's going on. I'm just speaking about general knowledge of school districts. So I have no in-depth knowledge about this. So take it with a grain of salt. But it sounds like to me that they said, hey, I think you should take a walk. And the guy said, well, I've got a contract.
That's what I'm the impression I'm under. And it was one of these contracts.
Yeah, and they were like, well, we still want you to take a walk. And he goes, great, pay my contract. And yep. They told him to take a walk and they paid his contract, which I think is up to the school board to do that. If I was a taxpayer in that school district, I don't, you know, the fact of the matter is it wasn't wrongdoing on the job, right? The reason they asked him to leave, and which probably makes me think they probably shouldn't have asked him to leave in the first place. You know, he wasn't doing something improper. He wasn't.
And he could have been a great advocate and spokesperson for what not to do. Like he could.
I wish you were there because, like, I really like what you're saying. Like, if he would have just, you know, man up, accepted it, and said, you know what, I'm staying with the school district, and I'm here to wrong the right I did when I was in middle school as a child.
Right, and pay attention, kids, because this is how hard it is to right the wrong.
Yeah.
So think.
Like,
about
what a lesson
it. Think
could be
about
had there.
It. Yeah.
Are you guys ready for the bright idea?
Yeah.
We did the story, we talked about this, the school that does the meditation in place of detention.
Yes.
Well, I've got the guy who is implementing that.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is helping schools replace detention with meditation. Andy Gonzalez is the Director of Marketing and Communications of Holistic Life Foundation. Andy's here to tell us about how they turn maybe what could be negative energy into mindfulness education. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure being on.
You know, this program has really gotten a lot of traction, it sounds like. And just from like even media coverage, I've seen this story on CNN.com and Upworthy.com. And what you guys are doing, it seems a little bit groundbreaking, but it also makes so much sense. And that is, it sounds like when maybe kids are having a bad day at school and they're headed into detention, rather than just sit them in a room, you guys do a little bit more positive activity. Is that right?
Yeah. So we have three of our staff members that are in the school every single day, the entire school day, and they're located in a room, which we call the Mindful Moment Room. Some people call it the Alternative Suspension Room, whatever it is. But basically, they're in there all day long. So when kids get referred to us, they're there waiting for them to receive the students and to kind of go through that 15-minute session where we do the active listening, the breathing exercise, and a meditation. So they're referred by the teachers in the elementary school. In the high school, you can self-refer. So you can raise your hand and say, this is a little too much. I need to go to the Mindful Moment Room. I need to get myself together. So the students can self-refer themselves and the teachers can refer the students as well in the high school.
So what's the kids' reaction when they come in? Are they skeptical at first?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it depends. You know, if the program is just initially put in place, then there is some skepticism, I think. I think some kids are like, this is lame. I'm not into this hippy-dippy stuff, flower power type stuff. I'm just breathing. Like, what's breathing going to do for me? I think in schools like in Robert W. Coleman, where we've been there for 4 years, in Patterson, where we've been there for 3 years now, you know, it's already kind of become part of the culture of the school. So, the kids kind of know what they're getting into and they want to be there. You know, an example of a great story, the principal at the school and in high school was saying how the other day our staff sometimes, if they're not in the room, they might outsource themselves to other classrooms just to get engagement levels to increase, or maybe just to check on a class and lead the entire class through a session. There was one day where a young gentleman was going through crisis. He went to our room and our staff wasn't there, and he sat down on the floor and just started meditating in a high traffic area in the school where Wow. The principal was like a few years ago, man, like, that wouldn't have happened. Like, that kid probably would have got smacked in the back of the head and made fun of for being on the floor. And now these kids are just walking by him, and it's just normal because that's what they do in the school when they get themselves together. They know that this is part of the culture. We do meditation. We do breath work. We're part of this mindfulness, this culture that we're trying to start implementing in our school. And they're just used to it. It's part of the regular day. Kids, sometimes if they've never been in the room, there's a little bit of skepticism. But I think a lot of times – kids just like to be heard. You know, I would say 70 to 80% of the time on the form the teacher sends with the student saying why the kid is going down there, that's incorrect. You know, like, I'll read on the form, oh, so Mrs. Johnson said that you're here because of this and this. And the kid will be like, that's not really why I'm here. And then they start talking. And that's when we do our active listening. So we're not counselors. We're not counseling them. We're just sitting there. We're just giving them a moment to kind of vent, to get something off their shoulders, get something out of their heads. And just let us know that, hey, we're here to listen to you. We understand you're going through something. Let us know. And I think that lets them feel good. And then usually if they take the breathing exercise serious, it's the first time that they felt that sense of inner peace in a very long time. So I think that they feel better. You know, they feel what these practices do for them. And they love our staff because our staff are there just because, like, we're like, hey, man, we're here for you. We love you. And I think that eventually – it just becomes a safe and peaceful place for them to be able to go to get a break from the school day.
What are the rules of confidentiality? Do you guys report back to the teacher and the administrator, or is kind of everything that's said there, you know, between you and the student?
Yeah. You know, we try to make it as all the information as confidential as possible. We keep all of the papers on file after the kids leave. My staff kind of takes notes on, hey, you know, Johnny came in, he was going through this. This is what I did. I led him through this exercise, then through this exercise. We're hoping to see this type of improvement. And now, mind you, like I said before, we're not counselors. If certain things pop up that's a little out of our pay grade, I guess is the best way to say it, then we have to report it. And there's that fine line, because you need to understand that what we're doing is we're creating this relationship with the students where they do trust us. They do feel comfortable sharing things they wouldn't usually share with their teachers or maybe with the administrators. And we try to keep that as secret as possible. But if it gets to something where, you know, where we feel like they're going to be physically harming themselves, or there's something going on where it's like, you know, this needs to be reported, we'll let them know. We'll say to them, hey, you know, like, this is too much. We have to take this to the authorities. An example would be one of the mindful moment rooms we had, there was an instance of human trafficking that was going on. Mm. And the student brought it to our attention. I mean, that's some serious stuff.
Yeah, that's
stuff.
Serious stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so we had to let them know, look, hey, we would like to keep this between us, but we can't keep this between us. Like, something needs to be done here.
Right.
So, and the student understood. But I think it's just being very clear to them and letting them know, hey, we're here for you. This is as confidential and private as it can be. But, you know, if it's something that's extreme or intense, we have to take it to the proper.
Well, and I think it says something that the student felt like they could open up to your team about that. If you're an outsider and you're one of these people who, you know, when I went to school, we had to sit in a room with no windows and white walls. And, you know, when you were in trouble, you needed to be punished. This is just kids having fun. Like, what's your reaction to that?
You know, because I remember that too. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the days of like dunce hats and stuff. And
right.
Put the little cone hat on the kid, make him sit in the corner and stare at the wall type stuff. I mean, I just don't think that stuff works. I mean, you know, you have a child who's going through something, and that's generally the reason for their behavior. You know, whether it's something at home, whether it's something internal. Whether it's something basic as just basic needs that they're not receiving. Like, I usually tell people about stuff like clothes and food and sleep. They're going through something, right? So their behavior is a little off. And a lot of times their behavior, those outbursts are due to them trying to conceal what's going on at home. You know, if I make this outburst right now, no one knows about my home life. Or if I make this outburst right now, no one knows I can't read or I can't do math. So instead, I'm just having this outburst to get in trouble. You know, they're screaming for attention. They're screaming for help.
Right.
So you could punish them, right? So Johnny is already going through it. And then you tell him, hey, you got to go to the office because your behavior is off. We're going to give you a suspension. So now he's fuming even more, right? He's walking to the office. He knows not only has he gotten in trouble in school, now he's going to get in trouble at home. His home life already sucks. By the time he gets to the office, he's super pissed off. A kid makes a joke. It sets him off even more. He gets suspended for 2 days because he ends up fighting the kid in the hallway. He leaves to go home. And what does he do at home? Nothing to help him with future incidences like this. So we just saw that, hey, instead of you punishing a kid for something you probably don't even know what he's going through, why don't we let the kid talk and give him tools that he can use in the future when he's faced with these same incidences, when he's faced with adversity, when he's faced with stress or trauma or these things that they're bombarded by constantly, like give him something that maybe he can use. And we don't expect the child to use it right away. I mean, some do, but I mean, we have repeat students, you know, that come in all the time and we keep working with them. Hey, did you use the breath this time? No. Well, remember next time, why don't we try this breath? Maybe this will be something you can use. And at least instead of you just saying, hey, you're a bad person, you're getting punished, it's, hey, I know what you're going through. Life can be overwhelming. How about you take a moment, get yourself together, and here's some tools when you're faced with this stuff that maybe you can use so you can constantly self-regulate. Because the key is letting them know that they are in control. You know, and that's a big issue with kids these days is them constantly doing the blame game. Well, Johnny said this about me. Or Tommy pushed me. Or, you know, it's like it's always somebody else did something to get that reaction out of them. And I always say to kids, well, so are they in control of you? You know, like, are they your master? Kids hate hearing that. Are they your master? Like, because you're telling me that you did this because of them. Well, why don't you take ownership and responsibility for your actions? Be your own. So you're in control. You're grown enough to be able to handle this. And I think that when they start understanding that type of concept, and they start using the techniques that we're providing them to be able to be more present, to be more mindful, to be more aware, that they can see that transformation happening within themselves. They notice it. I mean, for some kids, it's instantaneous. For others, it takes a little while. But the majority of the time, they feel, wow, this is pretty powerful stuff. I'm in control now. You know, I don't let people stress me out as much. I don't let people get me as angry. I don't let people make me get overwhelmed. I can be me all the time instead of allowing them to turn me into a monster. I always say I like the Hulk thing, you know,
right.
Comics are big nowadays. So they don't turn into this incredible Hulk and they do or say something that they're going to regret, you know, 5 to 10 minutes down the road.
As far as you know, how unique is what you guys are doing here? Are you seeing this elsewhere in the country or?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of the room, I think it's something that we began creating this concept of a room that you go to during times of crisis throughout the day, you know, that at any moment during the day, you can go to this room. There are tons of other programs around the nation that are using very similar techniques in terms of the mindfulness concepts, the breath work, the yogic postures, all that. I mean, there's schools all over the place. There's you know, tons of organizations doing the work. I think that we separate ourselves really by the way we deliver the practice. I think a lot of other organizations have different ways of doing that. You know, our teacher that kind of got myself and the other two founders in the practice did a very good job of explaining to us about meeting people where they are, about making the practice practical, relatable, about using certain language depending on what demographic you're speaking to. So, you know, a lot of times I think people think that these techniques are like something that only it's like a luxury, you know, it's only like with wealth are able to do, where we explain that this is achievable. These are reachable techniques that you can use. And it's more of a, like a survival skill. You know, like we're trying to give you as many tools in your toolbox to deal with this outside world because it is overwhelming.
Well, and you make a good point. Do teachers ever come into your room and say, teach me, show me how to do this? I need this as a teacher.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, we make sure, so we learned, I mean, we do this for 18 years now. We learned whenever we go into a school, we always do the teachers first and foremost. So we'll do a professional development day or we'll do a training with the staff first. Because you can't go and tell Johnny, hey, I see you're a little overwhelmed right now. Why don't you do some breathing? Because then he'll say to me, well, why don't you tell Miss Thompson to do some breathing? Because she just at me, right? You know, so you got to make sure that you go to the staff first. And so that they're reinforcing the concepts, that they themselves are being mindful, because then that trickles down to the students. You can't tell a kid to be mindful if the adults aren't being mindful. It never works. So we always make sure when we go into school, we do adults and staff first.
Your organization's kind of blown up. And I just heard you say 18 years. You know, how big are you guys?
Yeah. So right now, our programmatic staff is somewhere around 40, 45. And then our administrative staff, our people in the office, is around 10 to 12 people right now at this moment. And it's amazing. We started just with the three founders. First 8 to 9 years, everything we did was for free. And it was just us pursuing what we considered our mission in life and what the universe was kind of guiding us to do. One of the most amazing things is when we first began in 2001, we had a group of 15 to 20 young gentlemen that we started with our first program ever. And around half of those young men are still with us. So they are now employed by us and our staff members. So when they go into schools and they're talking to a fifth grader and the kid's saying, this and that, our staff is like, these guys, I've known these guys since the fifth grade. And these techniques changed my life and they made me be a better person, stronger mentally, physically, emotionally. And that's why I'm here. I'm doing the same thing that these guys did for me. I'm doing it for you because I know it works. And that impact is just phenomenal. And it's great to see them as well, because if you look at them amongst their peers, they just stand out. It's leaders amongst them. And they would say to you, it's the practice. You know, this saved my life. I'd either be dead, incarcerated, or just doing nothing with my life if it wasn't for this. And now I'm making an impact in my community and I'm empowering and uplifting my community to make it a better place.
You guys are based in the Baltimore area. If somebody wants to learn more, where do you recommend they go? Do you have a website?
Yeah, so they can always go to our website. It's www.hlfinc.org. Send me an email at any time too. I mean, we're based out of Baltimore, but we do programs nationally and internationally. So our Mindful Moment program, we'll go into schools. A lot of times people ask us to come and help them start implementing something similar in their cities. And right now there's a room in Louisville. There's a room in Wisconsin. We have some in Somerset County, which is on the Eastern Shore. We're working on implementing in Buffalo, Charlottesville, Asheville, Boston. And we've even done tours in Germany, Austria, England, Scotland, and we head to South Korea in July. So we're all over the place.
Well, Andy Gonzalez, it sounds like you guys are doing incredible work. And I think most people listening would agree that, this is really positive that you're trying to focus this energy into good.
Heck yeah. I mean, everybody needs it. That's another thing that we always say to people, especially social media, the state of the nation right now, state of the world. Everyone at some point in time is a little bit stressed. And I think that it'd be very beneficial to society if people just took a moment in their days to just pause, take a breath, and to just be. I always say to people, we are human beings. We're not human doings, right? So it's time for us to just take a moment and just be whenever we get the opportunity to.
Good stuff. Well, Andy, are you ready for our pop quiz?
Sure. Throw it at me and see what I got.
All right. First question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Mindfulness.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Self-compassion.
Elaborate on that a little bit for me.
Realization of the self and learning to love yourself. When one learns to love themselves, it's easier for them to be compassionate and empathetic towards others.
What does every child deserve?
Love.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
Understanding where the youth are coming from. So knowing, really understanding what's going on in their home environment and being able to relate to that and kind of put themselves in the shoes of the child and not making assumptions on their behavior based on than just having this wonderful home life, where a lot of times I think what goes on at home really impacts what's happening in the school day.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
Some form of mindfulness practice that they could use for themselves and then in turn use in their classroom, whether it be a breath, how to take a basic belly breath, or whether it be just a meditation to still themselves for a moment. You know, teacher turnover and burnout in Baltimore City is unbelievable. The work that they had to put in it's a lot, and they deal with so much. So if they can be able to learn how to take a moment for themselves, I think it'll assist them with their students, and then they can start using that during their school day in terms of transition times before tests and quizzes to better manage their class and get them to self-regulate.
Which teacher changed your life?
Does it have to be a school teacher?
No, I don't think so.
I would say it's Ali and Ottman, my business partner's godfather. I call him Uncle Will. He made me kind of take my first step along the path and held my hand as I continued to walk it. And I wouldn't be the man I am today without him.
Good stuff. And last question, pen or pencil?
That's a great. I write all the time, and it's weird. My initial thought wanted to say pencil, but I never write with a pencil, so I'm gonna go with a pen.
All right, Andy Gonzalez. Again, we appreciate your time, and we appreciate all the great work that the Holistic Life Foundation is doing.
Really, thank you so much for all this. Appreciate talking to you. Just remind your audience: love is the most powerful force in the universe, and Holistic Life Foundation loves all of you.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismissed. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortego, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed.